Hello, welcome to Dark Materials. I'm Faye. Hi.
And I'm Rachel. Hello.
This is a podcast where we're reading through and discussing Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials novels, a chapter at a time, spoiler free.
In this episode, we are discussing chapter 34 of The Amber Spyglass, There Is Now. There is now. Okay. Is it there is now?
I don't know. I guess you can say it however you
this
want.
This is why?
Yes. Yes. Well, hello.
Hello.
Hello. If you are listening in real time, we are sorry we're late. I've been ill, and you can probably still hear it a little bit, and I could not get out of bed, so I could not record a podcast.
Could not, would not record a podcast.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah,
very fair. It is sickly season, isn't it?
Truly. Do you know what? We were talking about this. It's the changing season. It always gets me. I think I've escaped it. I usually get like a little bit, I'm mentally ill, so I usually get a little bit mentally unwell at the change of the season, which happened. And then I was like, okay, maybe I won't get ill then. No, like the week after, yeah, you're ill for a whole week. And it's horrendous.
Yeah, the body likes to wait to just let you think you're safe and then catch up all of a sudden. Everything. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm hoping this is it for me for the rest of the winter, although I'll probably catch something else at some point, I'm sure.
Touch wood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think I did mine the other week. Was it two
when
two
we got back from Scotland?
Ago? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a while ago. So
yeah, it was.
I'm doing another one, but please can that just be it?
So, this is a very short chapter.
It is.
And we are recording like first thing in the morning, which is not our usual recording time. So if there's like yawns or it takes us a while to get our head around things, that's why.
Yes. Yeah. If we have a slightly different energy today, it's because we're recording bright and early. It's not even that bright or that early, but...
No. I mean, when it's like dark in the morning and when it's cold, I feel like anything before 10 a.m. feels like really early.
True. Can't wait for the clocks to go back there.
Oh, God.
Forward, back, whichever way they go in.
Yeah.
All back. Yes.
Back, yeah. Yeah. We get an extra hour. That's it. I'm like, we get that extra hour one day. Does that make up for the like 4 months of horrendousness?
Of it just being dark and horrible forever.
Yeah.
No.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So, a couple of things to say. One is review winners. We have not contacted anyone yet. So if you're thinking, oh, I didn't win, you might have. We have just been busy / ill / lots of stuff's going on. We will get around to it at some point.
We did the draw.
Yeah.
Did it on FaceTime? Not FaceTime. Like, what's that video called? Faye. And was like, look, watch as I spin the wheel to choose the names. And then gave her the list of names. And she's not done it. I'm joking. She's been ill.
I haven't done it. But I will do it. And we'll mention it on the pod when we've done it as well, just so that to give you all a nudge to like check your emails and stuff. And the other thing we wanted to mention, which is very exciting, is that over in Merchland, we still have all the good stuff. So we still have all the T-shirts, mugs, list pads, stickers, all that kind of good stuff. And we also now have some really, really limited, exclusive mini tote bags and scrunchies that were handmade by Rach.
Yes, yes. They are very limited in number because I designed the fabric myself, and it's based on the same design as our symbols T-shirts with the alethiometer, the spyglass and the knife on them. And we get the fabric specially printed so that I can make fabric-y stuff out of it. But it means that I can only do so many because I am but one person. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Very fun. It's an important part of the lore behind the scrunchies is that I stitched all of the ends together while watching Spice World with Faye.
Yes.
So,
yes. I feel that brings like a certain energy to the scrunchies.
It really does.
For sure. So yeah, go and have a look at hdmpod.co.uk/shop. Good thing to remind you, if you wanted to buy merch for like Christmas presents or just like holiday presents in general, would recommend doing that as soon as you can, just because Purst always gets a bit bananas around Christmas, and we want to make sure that you have everything. So yeah, I mean, October, obviously, as everybody knows, we, especially if you're ordering t-shirts, we do our merch orders in monthly runs. So end of October is probably your best shout to buy any kind of like holiday presents for anybody, because we're not sure when the like last shipping dates will be in December/November. So yeah, end of October is probably your best bet.
Yes, yes, yes. Very exciting. I was wearing my Lithiometer t-shirt yesterday. I wear all my t-shirts all the time, and I don't think it's big-headed of me to wear t-shirts for my own podcast. I love them.
They are great. They're so soft and nice. And also, we ran out of mugs and we've just got more. So if you want a mug, now is the time. That's a great present idea as well, I think, a mug.
The mugs are really nice as well. They're really nice. This is an audio format and I keep trying to describe all of our products, but they're really nice. They're the kind where it's like the white ceramic on the outside with the print, but then the handle on the inside of the mug is black and it makes it feel really classy. Like, I feel like it's a good, like, it's a tear up from your standard printed mug.
It is. They are really nice. They are really nice. So yes, get your orders in for presents or just for yourself, you know, treat yourself. Why not?
Exactly. Yes. It's one of the best ways to support the podcast, aside from being one of our lovely, lovely patrons or just interacting with us and giving us a review and all that good stuff. So, yay.
Yes,
yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I guess to mention as well, on Patreon, we will be doing a Halloween watch along at some point. It will probably be after Halloween now. But if you want to get in on that good stuff, then you can become a patron at patreon.com/HTMpod. I'm really doing the sales pitch today.
Very salesy morning. Hey, Faye.
Hi.
What would your demon have been this week?
So I was looking at, because I've been not very well, I was like, I always go down the route of like cuddly demon and then I always end up picking a dog. So I'm not doing that. I was like, oh, what demons are like quite sociable? Because like I've been ill, so I've not really been doing anything. And I feel like if I had a little like sociable demon, it'd be good at keeping me company. And also, depending on how far it could get away from me while I was ill, it could go and do some socialising out front of the house, you know what I mean? Talk to the neighbours, all that kind of stuff. So I went with a guinea pig.
Aww.
Apparently they're really sociable and they like to either socialise with other guinea pigs or like play with humans and get to know humans. And I fucking love guinea pigs. I used to have one when I was a kid and my dad named it Albert. For some reason. And it died on Christmas Day, which is very sad.
Oh,
I know.
Albert.
I know. He was old, though. He lived to be like 4 or 5. So that was good. But he was great. And they're just so funny and so stupid looking. And they make a right stupid noise.
They do. The noise is really silly. Who was it that I saw? And their, I think the dog was making a really stupid noise. It sounded exactly like a guinea pig. And I was like, that is the weirdest thing in the world. How they sound like bubbles popping, don't they?
Yeah. They're so strange. I love them. They're just little weirdos and their faces are so stupid.
Also, like guinea pig TikTok, great place to be.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, yes. So yeah, I'm a guinea pig this week. My demon's a guinea pig.
I like that. Very round, very sausage shaped.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. What about you? What's your demon this week?
I am thinking about how it's spooky season, how I'm in the midst of all my spooky season making. And I'm trying to find the name of, I'm so good at being so prepared, the name of a specific kind of bat that is adorable. And I think I sent a picture of it to you a few weeks ago.
Okay.
It's a little bat that is called a Nimbermiotis, also known as the orange-furred bat, or the painted bat. And it is adorable. They have a little orange fluffy body and the wings are orange and black. And I don't know how everybody is not more obsessed with them because they look like a mascot for Halloween.
Yeah, they do. It's almost like, I can't see it properly because you're showing it me through the screen, but it's almost got vibes of like LMP with the like level of orange that its fur is.
Yes, yeah, the golden monkey of the bat world.
Yeah.
Oh no, its scientific name is Cerevula picta. So there you go. It's called the orange bat or the painted bat. So if you want to look for them, they are adorable. They look exactly like Halloween. And I want one of those to be my little mascot. I've been working on lots of little bats and things as part of my art practice or my art stuff. So very into bats at the moment. And yes, also the idea of just having a little sleep all day and being able to wrap myself up warm. Well, that would be if I was being a bat. If I had a bat, the bat would be cozy and snuggly in my pocket or like clinging to my shoulder. I saw a TikTok or a reel the other day of somebody that had a little bat crawling on their shoulder, and it crawled down their chest into their like t-shirt pocket, and I was like, I want to be a pocket bat.
Oh god, same. I love bats so much. I always think of that, I don't remember what type of bat it is that's like really big, and there's that picture that goes around every year, and it's like that bat that's hanging, and it looks like it's like human size, but it's not that big, but ooh, it's like the perspective of the photo, but they are quite big. Hang on, I'll find it. You'll have seen it. I'm sure I've shown it before. You will have seen it before.
See, I just keep getting videos of the bat sanctuary that has the elderly fruit bat that can't fly anymore. So the sanctuary people carry him round and he like flaps his wings like he pretends that he's flying. I have to send it to you next time I come across it because it keeps coming up in my feed. But like, yeah, they like carry him around above their heads around the bat sanctuary. Oh my gosh, that's horrifying.
Isn't it horrifying? Like, it is perspective. They are big.
Very
they're not
vampire-y, yeah.
Yeah, they are big, but they're not, that looks like almost human-sized. But the thing is that we both love bats, but I do find that horrifying. It creeps me out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's not cute. But the only reason that that's not cute is because he doesn't look like a real bat. He looks like...
That's like a human dressed up as a bat. Maybe it is.
Exactly. And we don't like humans, we only like bats.
Exactly. Humans are much more terrifying than any kind of bat.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we get into this very short chapter?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Last chapter, Lyra and Will got more comfortable in the Malefa world, spending a day eating and working alongside them and Mary.
Will and Lyra told Mary their stories, and Mary told them hers, which awoke something within Lyra.
In this chapter, Mary finally figures out why dust is flowing out of the worlds and watches her beloved tree fall down.
She watches as Ew, Father Gomez, shows up on one of those bastard birds and breaks into her house.
Gross. Rude. Rude. Rude and gross. Just rude and gross. So here we are in the chapter. Would you like to guess what the picture is? Here's me actually looking because I can't remember.
Is it a tree falling over?
It isn't, I don't think. Hang on, let me open the thing. No.
Is it clouds?
Yeah, it is. It's the moon and clouds.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. There is a lot of cloud talk in this chapter.
Yeah, there is.
Clouds and cloud shadows.
Yes. Would you like, when you finish your yawn, would you like to tell me about the quote?
Yes. So the quote, it's a lovely quote. It was very hard for me to read the quote this chapter because, as you know, I don't have it written down. It's like smushed into this, into a little box. And the print of the box, the quote is so fine that I could not figure it out. I had to guess some of the words as I was trying to type it in to find out where it was from. It is, of course, from our pal, William Blake.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Yes. Shew you all alive, the world where every particle of dust breathes forth its joy. Interesting.
What does the word shew mean?
I'm sure I looked this up.
It's like S-H-E-W, isn't it?
Yeah, it means it's an old-fashioned spelling of show. It's just old-timey. Just old-timey.
Old-timey,
so show.
Sure.
Yeah. One of our patrons has already shared this article with us because it is featured in Demon Voices, which is one of Philip Pullman's books that we are going to probably look at some point in the future. And one of our patrons, the lovely Rebecca, shared a screenshot of this on the Discord because this essay by Philip Pullman has some really strong like metaphors about how discovering your favourite author is like walking into a house you didn't know existed and finding all the windows and doors, etc., etc. And it felt very much like the house analogy that we had last chapter with Lyra's kind of awakening moment, which is very interesting. And that was the beginning of this essay in which he talks about William Blake. Now, I ended up stumbling across this in a different way. I didn't realise they were from the same thing until I read the house bit at the beginning and remembered that Rebecca had sent it to us. So this is actually from an article that Philip Pullman wrote for The Guardian about a William Blake exhibition that was opening in Oxford.
Okay.
So it's basically an essay that he's already written for a newspaper that he's popped into his book, which I think is very cool. It's very nice.
Love that.
Little repurposing, reduce, reuse, recycle. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's very cool. And it's basically him talking about his entire relationship with the works of William Blake, how they've affected him, his way of thinking, the philosophy that Blake uses, and how it's impacted him as a person and an author. So it's a very good essay to read. We can link it in the show notes if you want to read it, if you don't have Demon Voices to read it, because I think it's the exact same essay, which is pretty cool. Also very handy, considering we've done so many Blake quotes, I'm surprised I haven't found it already. So I'm just going to quote directly from the article, because I think Phil explains really well where this quote is from, what it means, and what it kind of means to him. And I think that's kind of all that I ever try to do in these little moments. So, in the opening passage to Europe, A Prophecy, Blake recounts how he says to a fairy, "Tell me, what is the material world and is it dead?" And in response, the fairy promises to show you all alive the world where every particle of dust breathes forth its joy. This is close to the philosophical position known as panopticism. Don't know.
Mm-mm.
We'll figure that one out. Or the belief that everything is conscious, which has been argued back and forth for thousands of years. Unless we deny that consciousness exists at all, it seems we have to either believe in a thing called spirit that does the consciousness, or that consciousness somehow emerges when matter reaches the sort of complexity we find in the human brain. Another possibility, which is what Blake's fairy is describing here, is that matter itself is conscious. Very dust, very cool.
Yeah. So that's interesting then. So I guess that's where he got the idea for the whole book series and the whole dust thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much inspired by that. Also, this opening passage to Europe, A Prophecy, Blake is recounting how he himself, Mr. William Blake, bumped into a fairy and caught it in his hat and asked the fairy about the meaning of life, the universe and everything.
I mean, that is always happening to me. I don't know about you. Same. I'm always bumping into fairies and asking them questions.
Yeah. So we've already discussed how Blake is a bit of a spooky bitch, but like, I love how it's just a little bit woo-woo and I love it.
Yeah, for sure.
Literally away with the fairies.
Yeah. The whole thing about like dark matter being conscious and stuff, I had no idea. I just thought it was like fictional for this book series. I had no idea it was like a theological, like philosophical question that people have been asking for years and like actually researching into. Because I'm reading a book called Dark Matter at the minute, which is like a thriller. And it's kind of explained in that as well. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's not just
cool.
Phil.
Yeah.
Does it make you think that Phil is less clever now because, you know, it's a thing that exists elsewhere?
But it also, like, it doesn't make me understand it anymore either, because I struggle to grasp the concept of, like, dust and dark matter. Like, if somebody came up to me as a person that is doing a His Dark Materials podcast and said, "Can you explain dust to me?" I think I'd get there, but I think I'd find it quite difficult.
Yeah. For sure. But also that's the point. All of the characters in these books are spending their entire giant character arcs that are entirely centered around dust, trying to figure out what it is, what it does. We're towards the end of the third book and Mary is making these like discoveries. And she's a scientist. So we can't blame ourselves for not getting it.
True. It can't be expected of us. We're not scientists.
Yeah. We are but humble podcasters.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay, should we get into this chapter?
Let's do it.
So, Mary can't sleep. She's scared. I like the way that it describes her not being able to sleep as being like, it kind of gives you the vibe of when you try and go to sleep when you're drunk, right? It's like the room is moving kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Something made her sway and lurch as if she were at the brink of a precipice and she snapped awake, tense with fear. So obviously she's got a lot of stuff on her mind, but it just reminded me of when you lay down, when you're kind of like tipsy and or drunk, or you've just smoked some weed and you're like,
Yeah, you feel a bit swayy inside your own head.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the being on a precipice thing is also that thing when you're dropping off to sleep
and you
like
jump.
Step or jump or whatever and you like jolt awake.
Yeah.
And so I'm just picturing her just like every time she thinks she's going to sleep, she just jolts awake. It happened 3, 4, 5 times until she was like, absolutely not. I'm not sleeping. I'm just going to get up.
Yeah.
Giving up.
Yeah. So she gets up and she leaves. And Lyra and Will are asleep under a tree, which I'm interested in. they obviously must feel very safe in that world. But I'm interested in why they're not in Mary's house with Mary. The two Alapi are a threat. Why are we leaving the children outside?
I mean, it works out for the best.
It does.
Maybe Mary's giving them their space because Mary is an amazing person who gives people space. And I think they are used to sleeping outdoors. Maybe they've said, like, also maybe Mary doesn't have much space in her little house. I can see the Malefa being quite efficient with space. It might be that she's just got, like, enough room for a cot bed and all her stuff. And, like, it's roomier for them under the tree.
True. So we get, like, our first description of clouds moving, which is a huge theme in this chapter. Mary just notices that there's, like, the shadow of some clouds moving. It's compared to animals migrating, but animals migrate for a purpose. So why are these clouds moving like that? And then it's kind of just like, it had no meaning at all. Pop a pin in that.
Yeah. A very brief pin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she spends the first half of this chapter very much thinking about how, like, nothing has any meaning anymore. Like, nothing has meaning. Oh, everything looks like it's moving with purpose, but it simply can't. It simply isn't. Like, clouds don't move with purpose. And that's just what she's decided. That's what she knows as a scientist. We get a lot of Mary thinking about her, again, especially rolling off of last chapter and Mary's entire speech about Christianity and her relationship to God. We're getting that again, because we get a little quote here. She's seeing everything moving. She's seeing her tree tossing and like swaying in the breeze, and she feels an urge to like run towards it. She hurried towards it, moved by the excitement of the night and desperate to join in. This was the thing she told Will about when he asked if she missed God. It was the sense the whole universe was alive and that everything was connected to everything else by threads of meaning. When she'd been a Christian, she'd felt connected too. But when she'd left the church, she felt loose and free and light in a universe without purpose. And then had come the discovery of shadows and her journey into another world. And now this vivid night, and it was plain that everything was throbbing with purpose and meaning, but she was cut off from it and it was impossible to find a connection because there was no God. And I just find that really interesting because Mary has spent her entire journey connecting with the universe, discovering dust, literally speaking to dust, following her instincts. And she, in my understanding of her as a character, is one of the most connected to the universe people. And the fact that she doesn't feel that connection, or that she's, because of her rigid Christian upbringing, she's been told her only way to find that connection with the universe is through God, and she's struggling to like re-find it despite being one of the most in tune and connected people we can even think of in these books. And it's just proof that imposter syndrome gets the best of us,
for sure. And I think that it's so interesting, I think I briefly mentioned this last chapter, but like the nuance of her not feeling this connection anymore and that being like a very big deal to Mary, but also the part where it says when she left the church she felt loose and free and light. Yeah. And that's quite a positive description of that. So it's interesting that there's more than one factor to how she feels about this situation. Like, on one hand she feels loose and light and free, which maybe she didn't when she was in the church, but on the other hand she's like, well, what's the purpose? I'm not connected to anything anymore.
I think that the Christian church has rewired her to think that burden is connection. Mm. So she feels unburdened and is interpreting it as being disconnected. Whereas actually she's still connected to everything. She's just not burdened by the oppressiveness of the rules and regulations and like rigidity of how the church says you have to interact with the world and be connected to the world. She is unburdened, but she thinks she's untethered. And it's like, it's not the same thing, Mary. And I love that we get to kind of feel her like realize that in this chapter.
Yeah, for sure. So her tree, it falls. And it's just really sad. I like the description of the sound and things like that. Hang on. But she hadn't got halfway towards the grove before she heard a different sound among the lashing of the leaves and the streaming of the wind through the grass. Something was groaning, a deep, somber note like an organ, and above that, the sound of cracking, snapping and breaking, and the squeal and scream of wood on wood. Surely it couldn't be her tree.
Oh, Mary's tree.
It is her tree. Century.
Also, her saying, I'm so disconnected, I'm not connected to anything, so I don't believe in God. And yet she has this such a strong bond to this tree that is basically a magic dust tree.
I guess that the tree coming down is a metaphor for her not feeling connected to anything, because there goes the thing that she felt the most connected to, that was like an inanimate object, I guess, not like a tile or anything like that, or any other humans. But yeah, whatever, that tree, she felt so connected to it, she's just thinking about how she doesn't feel connected to anything, and then it falls.
Oh, yeah. Poor tree. R.I.P. Mm-hmm. Mary's tree. A character in its own right. She had some real moments in that tree. Real moments.
She had some great moments in that tree. Wink.
She was headed to the tree to try and, in an effort to reconnect to the world, relink to the world. She wanted to feel that out-of-body experience that she had when she was in the tree.
Yeah.
We remember when she drifted above her body and kind of floated with the dust and then used her sense memories to get back to herself. She wanted to do that again.
And we all remember what happened in the tree.
We all remember what happened in that tree. Some real times in that tree.
Yeah.
The fact that she went to the tree seeking that connection and the tree has fallen before she could get there as well is devastating. And a sorry sign for the state of everything.
Absolutely. Yes. So she runs over to it. She sees her like splintered platform and she climbs into it, and she manages to like climb up onto the broken branches, because I guess it's a fucking huge tree, so you can still get some height if you like climb in and climb up. And she looks through the spyglass and she just sees a fucking stream of dust, doesn't she? Let's face it. She sees a stream of dust going one way, and the clouds and the wind and everything else going the other way. The whole sky seemed to be flowing with it, a great inexorable flood pouring out of the world, out of all the worlds, into some ultimate emptiness. And then she joins stuff up in her brain.
Yes.
Which is nice for us, because we've been wondering about this for fucking ages.
I feel really bad for the TV series, because they had to exposition angel this explanation.
Yes, they did.
Because they couldn't have Mary doing like an out loud stream of thought in a tree, because that would not have looked right on screen. I love that books can just tell us, like, people can figure stuff out in front of us in a book and it's not weird. So we can just be with Mary in this moment because she's brilliant. So obviously she's put it together.
Mm. My question about this as well, and I don't know if it's just because I've read the books before and even this time I didn't put it together, although I already know. Does it seem like a little bit of a reach? Like, it seems like such a exact piece of like knowledge that she's pieced together through these scenarios that have happened, that I'm like, would you get there? Like, I don't think I would get there.
If Lyra and Will have reached the point in their stories where they've told her about the land of the dead, and I don't know if they have, I don't know where they stopped their story and she started hers, but if they've told her about the land of the dead and the mystery explosion, then that Will recognized that it was a big window, because Mary was looking through the spyglass at a similar time to when the Azrael explosion, not the Azrael explosion, the Magisterium explosion, the Lyra bomb, the hair bomb, when that went off. And Mary noticed that it went from a fairly steady flow to like a torrent of dust. If she's then had that conversation with Will and Lyra and they've gone, we saw the dust, like we could actually, with our human eyes and no spyglass, see like dust falling in this abyss, Mary might, and also that Will, because in the moment Will recognises that it feels like a window. So that would be a vital piece, I think, for Mary to put that together, because that's the link that really, really shows that's a giant window.
Mm. I get the feeling in this chapter that she doesn't know why it's going so quickly out of the worlds. I get the feeling that she doesn't know that, because she doesn't mention the bomb. She doesn't mention anything like that. She just says, but the vast flood in the sky was another matter entirely. That was new and it was catastrophic. So they're the only lines we get. I mean, she could know, but you'd think that if she did, they would, Phil would be more specific.
Why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, regardless of whether it's a reach or not, it's an interesting thing to put together. And basically, we've been talking for ages, haven't we, about like, why is 300 years, why is that significant? Why is that significant? And we know that is when the knife was made. And we know that for the past 300 years, the Malefa have been noticing that Seraph has either gone, the trees are falling, things are dying, that kind of stuff. So Mary puts it together that Dust is leaving Will through the windows that have been left open because Will has told her that some people have been careless and left windows open. Obviously, Mary came into the Malefa world through a window. So we know that windows have been left open, which is interesting. And pop a pin in that.
Yes, important.
The main issue is obviously the huge bomb, the Azrael explosion, and then the huge Lyra bomb. That is what's causing, we know that's what's causing the like huge, huge flood of dust leaving all the worlds. Conscious life would come to an end if it's not stopped. So it's pretty important to stop it.
Yeah. I love the way that she kind of refers to it as like that brief window of conscious life, because like it, in the history of all things, of like the world, I guess the period of time in which humans have been conscious and aware of their consciousness mm-hmm. is such a blip.
For sure.
And if she's there for the end of that blip, that must be terrifying.
100%. I really like the quote. So, but the vast flood in the sky was another matter entirely. That was new and it was catastrophic. And if it wasn't stopped, all conscious life would come to an end. As the Malefa had shown her, dust came into being when living things became conscious of themselves. But it needed some feedback system to reinforce it and make it safe, as the Malefa had their wheels and the oil from the trees. Without something like that, it would all vanish. Thought, imagination, feeling would all wither and blow away, leaving nothing but a brutish automatism, and that brief period when life was conscious of itself would flicker out like a candle in every one of the billions of worlds where it burned brightly. Great quote.
Great quote.
I'm assuming this is the thing, right? This is what the Magisterium wanted. They wanted that brutish automatism. How do you say that word?
Automatism? Like, because it's like you're like... Everyone automated. Becomes more like an automata.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I understand the meaning. I just couldn't get the word out for some reason. But yeah, that's what the Magisterium wanted, right?
Yeah.
So Mary felt the burden of it keenly. It felt like age. She felt 80 years old, worn out and weary and longing to die.
Same,
oh, Mary. Same. Honestly, same. But oh, Mary.
I feel that.
Sad.
Yeah. It's a lot.
So she... sets off to go back to the village. And then this is where she learns that everything that she's seen as she's come out here. So the clouds are moving, like the wind is blowing, the grass is moving in the opposite direction to the dust. And Mary then puts it together that nature is trying to hold back the dust flood.
Yeah, she's witnessed it and been like, it looks like everything is pushing against the dust. But that can't be true because, like, it's just stuff. It's just random. It's not, there's no purpose to this. And then, like, she's had this revelation and then she's been like, oh, no, there is. Everything is pushing against the dust. And then there's this lovely quote just at the beginning of the sentence, which is just, matter loved dust. It didn't want to see it go. That was the meaning of this night. And it was Mary's meaning too. We love dust.
Mm-hmm, we do.
Keep it dusty.
We do. And I enjoy the next bit of that, which is, had she thought there was no meaning in life, no purpose when God had gone? Yes, she had thought that. Well, there is now, she said aloud, and again louder. There is now.
And now we know the intonation for the chapter title.
There is now.
It's not there is now. It's there is now.
There is now. Which is nice. I like that. I like that revelation for Mary, and I also like that she's like vocalized it. She's vocalizing it to no one but herself, which I enjoy.
But also to the universe, which she's just decided and realised is conscious.
True.
It's like she's talking, she's like, it's like she's like talking with the wind that's pushing against the dust to be like, I'm with you. We got this, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. So now she sees something. This is when, right, why does this always happen in a Mary chapter? We have like a really lovely time with Mary, albeit this one's obviously been a bit perilous, but like we've had Mary like realising that nature is pushing back and that there's some meaning for her. And then we have to fucking have Gomez showing up. Why does that always happen in the Mary chapters?
Because we're not allowed to have nice things, Faye.
No, we're not.
Phil says no. No nice Mary chapters for you.
No.
Must ruin with horrible, nasty man and horrible bastard birds.
Yeah. Yeah. So she sees him basically riding one of the bastard birds on the water. He gets off the bird. He's holding a fucking rifle, which is just so ridiculous.
I know we've had people with guns in these books before, but like has it been a little while? I don't know. Like, there's been like gunshots fired in the last few chapters probably, but it just feels so out of place in Malefa world.
It gives me the vibe of when you're watching an episode of Buffy and somebody comes in with a gun and you're like, whoa.
You're like, this is not this show. What are you doing? Yeah.
Exactly. So he's heading in to the village, but she's too far away to do anything. I can imagine. Can you imagine how helpless you would feel?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just like, well, I can't do anything to stop it because I'm too far away. And even if I know that she does eventually start running down, but it's like, even if I started running down, I wouldn't get there in time for whatever he's planning to do.
Yeah. It's like nightmare territory in terms of like that feeling of being too far away and running through like sludge to try and get to something. I don't love it. She is running towards and she's about to shout to like wake the village up and alert the village to the danger. But then she realizes that he's moving really slowly and looking through, like looking into the houses, and that he's clearly looking for someone. And like Mary's clever. She knows it's blatantly looking for Will and Lyra. And so she's just like mentally like, not under the tree, not under the tree, not under the tree. And this is where being asleep under the tree works to their benefit.
Yeah. But also, are we aware at this point that Gomez, he was sent for the serpent, right? Wasn't sent for Lyra and Will.
That's true.
So he is looking for Mary. And it's a case of that she thinks that he's looking for Lyra and Will. So when he goes into her house, I imagine she's a bit like, what the fuck?
True. I hadn't thought of that. Because I guess also it's a case of he's looking for Mary, but I'm sure if he saw the kids, he'd probably just shoot them to be safe.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. It's a little bit of both, I think. But I think that explains why he's going into Mary's house and why he's like looking through all the windows to try and decipher which one is Mary's.
That's very true. I had not put that together.
So then Mary does decide. He stops outside Mary's house and he goes into Mary's house, and that's when she decides to start like running back to be like, oi, what the fuck, mate? That's my fucking house.
Get out of my house.
Get out of my house. Yeah, and he basically goes into the house, I'm assuming, has Snoops. A little snoop.
Yeah.
And then he leaves.
Yeah. And she's just kind of like, she has this moment where she realises she stood like in the middle of a grassy field and there's a man with a shotgun. Or a rifle or whatever it is. If she gets spotted, she could be in danger. But he seems to be so very unconcerned about what's happening around him and just about her house and what's in the houses that he just, in a very creepy way, actually, like strolls on back really calmly. He's like, oh, she's not here today, I guess. And just
gets back on the bastard bird and fucks off.
Sits cross-legged on it, which is, I think, like a funny little image.
It's a bit of an ick, that, isn't it?
Really?
Somebody with a rifle sat with their legs crossed like they're in school assembly.
Yeah, crisscross applesauce.
Yeah, it was a bit of an egg, I think.
Fair. And yeah, he just glides away with the horrible, horrible bird. And I don't love it. I hate it. I wish that he wasn't at the end of this chapter.
Me too.
I wish that he'd just leave us alone so we could have a nice peril-free ending.
Right.
Because I'm sure that Phil's going to give us a lovely peril-free ending.
Of course, right? We know that for sure. So peril-free.
There's just three more chapters left to find out, so, you know.
Oh, my God. As if we've only got three more chapters left.
Four more chapters.
As if we've only got four more chapters left. Yeah, and that's the end of that one. Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. Mary's got a purpose. Everything has purpose. Everything has meaning. Mary is connected to everything, and she should remember that because she's the best.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. End of chapter. What's the next one called?
Over the Hills and Far Away.
Ooh. Ooh,
Mother
okay.
Duck said, quack, 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 quack. And all the little ducks came back.
Yeah, they did, hopefully.
Yeah. What a fun little chapter title.
It is a fun chapter title. Who would your award be for this week?
My award is awarded posthumously to Mary's tree. R.I.P. tree.
Yeah, R.I.P. tree.
R.I.P. tree. We had some good times in that tree.
We had some fucking great times in that tree. We really did.
But I think that's it. I think that's the only, the only thing I think I can. Because, I mean, obviously Mary's had a strong chapter, but I think the tree needs an honourable mention. So, yeah. What about you? Who's yours for?
Mine is for just nature pushing back against the dust. I was like, yes, I think that's where it needs to be, the award. But I love that we've given it to just nature in general.
Hey, this is the chapter where we found out that inanimate things were conscious, so I think they deserve awards now.
True. That's true. We could have been doing that this whole time.
Yeah. Why have I not been picking out trees for honourable mentions? Come on.
Oh.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Her Dark Materials. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HDMPod, and you can email us at herdartmaterialspod@gmail.com. You can also visit our website at hdmpod.co.uk.
If you want to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/HDMPod. We also have a shop where you can buy merch featuring all original artwork from Rach. You can find it at hdmpod.co.uk/shop. I'm Faye, and when I'm not talking about Mary and her tree, you can find me talking about Paramore on my other podcast, Still Into You. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts and find us on Twitter and Instagram at @StillIntoYouPod.
I'm Rachel, and when I'm not here chatting to you lovely folks about how nature's just real pretty and stuff, I'm making cute and magical arty things. You can find me over on Instagram at @RachMakes, on Twitter and TikTok at @Rach_makes, and over on my online shop, rachmakes.co.uk. The theme music for this podcast was written and produced by Johnny Knott.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. And don't forget,
keep telling stories,
and all will be well.
Short and sweet, just like us.
Yeah.